Welcome to One Decent Pastor, a weekly podcast of The Door located in Central Oregon, where three completely average guys join forces to make one decent pastor and to discuss, discover, and promote all things Bible.
Live on One Decent Pastor.
Chad's hitting the button.
Yes.
Chad's messed up today.
I am jacked up.
Sound like the lead singer of Green Day right now.
Is that a good thing or a bad
thing? I was
thing?
All by myself.
Oh, that's the other guy. Never mind.
No, the Green Day guy always sounds like he's stuffed up to
the yeah, yeah. Yeah, he's got the
as
nasal.
As far as we know, are we streaming on both?
Facebook and YouTube.
This morning, Facebook and YouTube.
Yeah.
So, we're hitting on both cylinders.
I think so.
Okay, both cylinders. that's rare for us. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah, it's springtime, so allergy season.
Yeah, your diet as well.
Yeah.
It's not springtime, guys. That's it's January.
Brent.
But it's 50 degrees out, has been.
I guess. You came in
birds
with
are
ice.
Still flying around. The deer haven't even migrated east. They're still at my house every day. Yep. It's like something's going on
the
here.
The bear just looking around going, seriously. I'm going to bed.
And there's still like green, like fresh shoots in areas of my yard that are coming out of the ground. And it's just like, this is bizarre, man.
It is kind of weird.
I'm not going to say I dislike it.
I like it a lot.
Because I like it a lot.
And the mountains look beautiful.
The mountains look gorgeous.
Yeah, the snow's falling where it needs to fall.
I was driving through that meadow today by the fire department there, looking over and just thinking, how lucky am I to live where I live?
It's incredible. Did you drive through the meadow or by the meadow?
By the meadow. Okay. I drive through it sometimes.
Could you picture Brent driving through the meadow?
Kind
of. Just skip through the meadow on the way to church.
Frolicking.
You're talking about down there by the firehouse? The fire station? Yeah, that's a good view.
Now it's gorgeous. Every time I don't look at the road much when I'm driving.
We have one, too, that never gets old.
Which one?
When we go over Harper Bridge to go home.
Yeah,
true.
Every time. Nice. It never ceases to amaze.
It's a shorter window.
Yeah, shorter window.
The one that I have to try to, stay on the road and look the whole time. But I make it. I haven't gotten a wreck yet.
Yeah. So. No, it stinks living here, for sure.
Yeah, it's rough. Hey, we got to see Pastor Jeff this morning.
Yeah, awesome. We did.
He's doing well, alive and well and upright and looking good. So
yeah, hopefully we'll have him back on here soon.
Yeah, hopefully soon. And it sounds like he'll be back in his pulpit at CBC in the beginning of February.
First of February, yeah.
So
Chad, you're going to be at his pulpit this week.
I am, but you'll be there next week.
Well, and then he's going to get back in there.
I'm not invited to go.
You're not invited.
Sorry, Chad.
Yep. Yeah, it's good to have Jeff back. He looks good, too.
Yeah. He does.
Yeah. Last time we saw him, he didn't look quite like that.
That's what I said. Last time we saw you, he looked pretty bad.
Yeah. And he was on his deathbed.
Yep.
Well, it's been a long haul for him. When did he actually go in?
I don't know.
Before. The surgery's been a long time.
It's been a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, before Christmas, right?
December,
wasn't
it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds right.
Yeah. And it was kind of touch and go there for a bit. So seeing him up and around and doing good is exciting.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, and his prognosis, according to him, is good, that everything that the surgery was supposed to do, it seems to be doing, right?
Yeah, he doesn't have any intestines left, but he's going to be all right.
Other than that,
there's nothing more to take.
We don't know. We don't know where anything goes when he eats, but other than that.
He just shoots out. Sorry.
I wonder if you would think this was funny. Probably not.
We're bordering on TMI here.
Yeah.
All right.
But we are bored. We're not there, though.
Yeah.
That's the good news.
Yeah.
We also get next Tuesday, our next Spurgeon Legacy event, pastor event that we do to put on is happening. So
got about
we'll
60
be fresh
pastors
off the heels
coming.
Of that.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic.
Very cool.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, and have 60 about registered.
Yeah, a little over 50 right now, but usually end up with a few more coming. So that'll probably be about, which is great for a January.
Yeah,
conference.
For winter it's not bad.
So this is our first winter one,
and we have a couple local guys, a couple no names.
No names. Ouch. Not to us.
No, they're fantastic to us. But
our people will know Blaine Braden from Eastmont and then Dan Dillard from the OPC.
The OPC. I'm down with OPC.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to go there.
You know me. Me, my wife, every time we would say it, one of us would have to complete it with that.
Yeah.
And it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad.
It's like if somebody says Marco, you just got to finish it out.
You do. Yeah.
For those that aren't familiar with the acronym, what does OPC stand for?
Orthodox.
Presbyterian.
Church.
Right.
Which is the Reformed branch. Well, there's a few, but that's the,
right. It's kind of the old school
I think so.
What's the other one stand for, David? Well, never mind. Keep going.
That's why I wasn't going to go there.
Chad's the one that's got restraint today, man.
Yeah. Good job, Chad.
Is that Dayquil you've taken?
Pick up the slack.
Yeah. We better jump into this, Terry, because.
You think so?
You gave us 6 pages.
I gave us too much.
Terry, you gave us a tome.
I know.
The subject is worth it, but.
We're going to truncate it. So the ODP topic today is the cutoff culture.
No, it is cancel.
Cutoff culture. Well, it's kind of the cutoff culture, cancel culture. And so it's taken from a Facebook post, actually, that a gal made that we thought that was really hit on some really good points. So to just kind of launch it, let me read this and then we'll tee up the ball. There's a dangerous idea spreading quietly through modern culture that if a relationship causes discomfort, it's abusive. And that if someone disappoints you, they're toxic. And that if your parents fail to meet your emotional needs perfectly, you're justified in cutting them out of your life entirely. And she says, this idea is not only false, it's destructive. What say you?
I would agree with that.
I would agree. This is destructive, even though there's a part of it that's appealing.
Sure.
There's a part of it that's like, oh, that's all I have to do if someone makes me mad is ditch them, right?
Yeah.
It's for the Christian, to me, it's contra gospel, and I'm sure we can unpack that more, but that's the thing that just stood out to me was like the idea that we are people who deserve to be cut off. And then God has made a way for us to be reconciled, and then you see this kind of mindset. Yeah. It's very
Brent. Why are you stealing all the thunder?
Oh, he just asked what we thought about it, and I'm just going to say that's my big thought on it. Was like, you know,
it should be very contrary to a Christian. And the gnarly thing is how many Christians I see doing this.
It's employing been baptized,
right? Christian so counselors,
yep, exactly.
Even pastoral counsel.
Yeah,
is this
sure?
And don't even get me started. Like, this is bad.
Well, we want to start. No, that's what the
bad.
Whole point
yeah,
is.
Yeah, this is bad.
So much of kind of modern psychology is not redemptive.
Yeah.
And that's where it becomes contra gospel, because the gospel is redemptive.
Yep.
And so much of, you know, cutoff culture or cancel culture or whatever buzzword you want to use, there's just no redemptive value to that way of thinking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the fact that this has come into the church and been sanctified, if you want to, or baptized, and brought into much of church counseling and things like that, where there's this idea that the healthy way forward is to make sure that you don't have any of these toxic relationships and so forth, which is basically exact same thing that the world says.
Totally.
Yeah.
We got to create safe spaces.
Well. Yeah, safe
spaces. Sorry.
Well, so we have to find our own safe spaces, and retreating to those is really in your spiritual interest, you know, in your
it is a me first mindset.
Yeah.
Which is why, like, it's ugly enough when it's in any human that they're canceling people in their lives that they should be loving and committed to regardless. But yeah, seeing it in the church for that reason is because it's a me thing. It's a way for me to be more about me rather than less about me.
Right.
And there's so many reasons it's contrary to Christianity. So,
right.
Yeah.
It is, but it's passed off, you know,
as a good thing.
As a way to have spiritual health, as a way to, be your best you, is to avoid things like this. But basically, when we start cutting people off, it kind of leads to kind of relational suicide, because it's hard.
Right. Right.
For you to get outside of yourself. And so we'll talk about some of that stuff a little bit later. Conflict, she says, is not evidence of abuse. It's evidence of relationship.
Sure. So inevitability, is that what we're talking about?
That's
if you're in relationship with people. I'm going to talk about this a little bit this week in my sermon.
Okay.
Let us not neglect or fail to meet with one another all the more as we see the day approaching, because we see this, we see people that just like ditch church because there's people there. You know what I mean?
Cause sure.
Because there's fallible people there that right. are going to cause you harm. It's inevitability if you're dealing with a sinful person that at some point the sin's going to come
out. And newsflash, right. You're one of them.
No, it's serious, right?
Right.
Like,
which is part of the, I think, the perspective warp, if you can call it that, of this whole thing is that the problems are out there with the other people,
right,
and I need to avoid them. It can't be me.
Yeah, why would it be?
Yeah, right. I'm the one right. that needs to be protected. I'm the
That's
victim.
Nonsense.
I'm the victim here, right?
Right.
I'm not the perpetrator. So what? So it, and she begins in this Facebook post to criticize the ideas behind that, that conflict is not evidence of abuse, but it's evidence of relationship. So the way that we view that, what difference would it make if we consider conflict as evidence of abuse rather than evidence of relationship? In other words, if we take the bait and say that conflict is evidence of abuse, that's the way we think about it, what difference does that make?
Well, nobody wants to put up with abuse. Nobody wants to be abused. Nobody should be abused. And so we justify the cutting off as, you know, kind of, you know, I'm just looking out for number one.
There you go.
Right.
You go, Brent. No, darn it. I'm going sideways with this thing.
Well, I guess we've just seen a shift, I think, and, you know, from the culture I grew up in and the culture before me, where basically you didn't ever talk about anything. You just kind of stuffed everything. You just dealt with it as it came. You know, there was this kind of this hardened, you know, thing. And now you've got kind of more of a, people are affected by just about, I mean, kind of crazy things. Somebody just shared a story, and I hope I'm not betraying anything. I can't remember who shared this with me, but they were at a dinner table with somebody that they knew, and there was a young person at the table, and they just asked this person, hey, you know, how's life? And they started to cry. They were offended that somebody would ask such a question to them.
Triggered?
Yeah. I mean, okay. in this weird way, it was like, what just happened? And again, so I don't even understand that. But again, I'm just coming from maybe a different paradigm, perhaps, and I don't know exactly what's taking place in our society to where we've gotten to this point now where people are just that fragile. And as a pastor, I'm curious about it because I kind of want to understand this. I don't want to just make fun of it and push it off to the side. I want to understand it. But
I want to make fun of it.
I kind of want to. But it's wrong to do that.
What's wrong with you people?
Yeah. But it is kind of this weird thing we're dealing with that I've, you know, like therapy culture now is this thing where we just didn't talk to anybody about any of our problems. You know, it's like therapists. I'm not doing that. Well, that's probably an extreme that was wrong.
You didn't sit on it, right? Like you didn't sit around and microanalyze everything.
It just wasn't an option in my growing up. I mean, we didn't even do that.
Well, if you heard of someone going to a therapist, that was like completely like taboo, right? Like it wasn't normal. So, and that's to your
point.
And
I'm saying that's wrong.
Right.
And then you've got this other thing now where it's like literally everybody, it's almost a badge of honor to say that you go to a therapist now. And again, so I'm not trying to make fun of it. I'm trying to say I just don't understand it. And I want to get to a place where I'm trying to figure this out a little bit more than I have.
So. I'm having a hard time adjusting to everything being abuse. Like that's where I was going to go. Like, and I mean the word, and I'm not saying it's completely wrong. I think there are by nature of the word, different forms of abuse. But again, back in the day, when that word came up, it was serious stuff because it was usually a physical thing that was happening. It wasn't a relational thing because someone raised the
yes
voice.
Yes and no, man. Go back and watch an old Bond movie.
Come on.
I mean, they were just slapping women around like it wasn't a big deal.
Yep.
It's kind of weird. I went back and watched the early ones, and I thought, well, holy moly, man. There was some stuff going on there that we didn't call abuse now.
Sure.
So even the way we defined it back in the day was weird.
But
the
word now is used as a mic drop. Like no one can argue with this.
Right. Yeah.
For any kind of mistreatment, no matter what it is, or anything we don't like that someone else did with us in an interaction. And it's insane. Like there's no way that's sustainable for any relationship, which is exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Right. Well. So, if it's a user defined term, you know, if it really doesn't have the cultural bookends that it used to have, like physical. I mean, really something.
Yeah.
You know that everybody would go.
You knew something big happened if
someone
used the word.
If it doesn't have that, what difference does that make now? If the abuse is whatever you want it to be, if it becomes like a wax nose, you know, and you just make it whatever you want, right? So what difference does that make?
There's a victim culture that's out there that's related to what we're talking about. And so as the victim, you want that word abuse to carry the same weight that we're talking about.
Totally.
But to your point, David, like it doesn't, not everything, like if everything's abuse, then nothing's abuse, right?
It's the boy that cries wolf now. It's kind of like, you're not going to take it super serious. Yeah, I'm not going to take
you
it.
You yelled at me, that was abuse. Well, maybe not.
Yeah.
But it gives you permission then to basically cancel or cut off anybody
it's
and
the
everybody.
License.
Totally.
And again, the working through these things is something that is not only biblical, but it's also really helpful. For us in our growth as people, to be able to work through conflict and work through hard situations.
So how is that helpful to work through those things? In what ways?
Well, it's just conflict resolution is something that, you know, if you can't figure that out pretty early on in life, it's going to be a hard life.
Yeah.
That's all there is to it, you know. And for me, like the example I thought of is going back to, you know, the Thompsons and the Maxwells for a time there. You know, we started out when we moved here as great close family friends. And then this conflict arose that it was really about stupid stuff, but it became like the Hatfield and McCoy kind of thing there for a minute where we really were at odds. And we could have left it that way. We could have just said, well, they're dead to us and we, you know, we're never going to. Or you work through this stuff and you figure it out to the glory of God, really, because it, not only did it allow us to minister together today, it also strengthened our relationship in this amazing way to where, I don't want to say it's bulletproof because we still get on each other's nerves. I think I got on David's nerves this morning once already.
You can tell. Probably. I don't have a poker face.
You know, but it's like there's an understanding now of who, you know, and there's a grace and there's a compassion and there's this thing that makes us want to fight through it.
Well, it's
more.
Like lifting weights, right? You start with. A low,
not tracking with you.
What you do, Brent, is you start with little 5-pounders, and then you go to 10 and 15 and 20, right? Like the more you do it, the more weight you add, like the more you can lift, right? And it's the same thing just relationally with people. I mean, me and my wife have been married for 32 years as a result of two people who have continuously abused each other but refused to walk away and continue to love each other through and due to, I mean, even in our abuse and like that's what relationships do. And we've gotten better at it. You know what I mean? I've gotten better at not being abusive towards her and not taking a complete offense to every time she abuses me, you know, because we've done it for so long. We know that our love can just win through that. You know what I mean?
But that also involves a mindset.
No, totally
When you go into marriage, you go into this, you should anyway, go into it with a mindset. If divorce is not an option. We have to work through this. And when you have that mindset.
Which divorce is the cutoff, right?
Well, it is, correct. Yeah, that relationship.
The severance,
But whatever it is, whatever relationship you're in, if you always have this kind of like, well, the minute somebody does this or offends me or upsets me or.
Take them off the list.
Then they're dead to me and I'm out. You're literally going to go through life with nobody.
And there are adjustments with certain people and certain relationships.
For sure.
That need to be made,
There
are tweaks.
Totally.
But there's it should never come to a point where we just straight up cut somebody off like you're talking about. Like adjustments are fine.
So. I think there have been people in our lives that I can think of even now where I don't pursue relationship with them any longer. I don't try to spend time with them. But again, if they called me or wanted to meet or whatever, I would do that.
That's what I mean. Is you haven't just canceled them, but you have adjusted what that relationship looks like.
Right. But you still respond in some way to their overtures. You know, if they contact.
But
you.
I've set up some, you know, maybe rules or boundaries.
We're going to talk about boundaries a little later.
Okay. At the end of the day, there's something wrong with someone who professes Christ and isn't into the idea of redemption.
Totally.
Right. And I get like things can happen in relationships where they might not be the same moving forward after, you know, things happen or whatever. But just in a broad sense, we should be about redemption.
Yeah.
Right.
I think there might be times, though, again, and I always think about the people that are listening to this and what they've gone through. And I don't know what people have gone through that are hearing this right now. But there are times when there are some lines that have been crossed in relationships that you really can't recover from.
Yeah, for sure.
And I'm not, you know, when we're talking about, what we're talking about now is just conflict in relationship, you know, where you don't get along and you're at odds with each other. You know, I didn't want to necessarily name things, but I think there are some things that you go through that adults do to children sometimes and things like that, that you're not coming back from.
Right.
You know, that person needs to go to jail and never be seen or heard from again.
Right.
I don't think we're talking about those kinds of things. And I'm just throwing that out there because it's when we're talking just on the surface, it's hard to know what lines we're drawing here. Right. And so just want to be careful there.
Yeah, there are things that are that constitute real abuse that just that you just change the landscape, and that's the way it's going to be.
Yep.
But even in those cases, right there, there is there's a difference between understanding that things have changed between you and that other person like that, and then just basically cutting them off and saying that they're dead. There is a difference.
What's your heart's desire toward that person? Even in the the worst circumstance and scenario, the Christian is still going to have want the best ultimately for that person, even if it can never be the same as what it was.
Well, and even if it can't be through you, I mean, you know, you want them to have other healthy relationships with other people, and it's just really an acknowledgement that things have changed, other than declaring, you know, that they have, and therefore I'm, you know, justified in whatever I do. So, I think we've already kind of answered this, but so is it a sign of a healthy relationship that it's not messy?
No, I mean every relationship that goes beyond the surface is going to have some mess to it.
I mean, I like them when
you can't avoid it.
I like relationships when they're not messy. I mean, I think it can be, but it doesn't necessarily have to be. I mean, you know, people are messy, and you know, we're selfish, and we're always going to bring conflict to every. I mean, I know I am. I'm going to bring conflict to every relationship I'm a part of because of me.
This is going to shock you guys, especially you, Brent. But our family is very loud. The way we talk, the things we say, the way we communicate. I mean, I remember when the kids used to bring like friends over to visit, and they'd have this little peek into how our family like talks at the dinner table, and the looks on their faces were like, were like, oh my gosh, this is the crazy, you guys are like the craziest, most dysfunctional family I've ever seen. And all it is that they're seeing people that are just communicating, even though it's messy, they're seeing people that are passionate and honest in their communication. But I don't know how many times you see, like, especially in churches, growing up in churches, where you had the perfect couple that never raised a voice, that never had, you know, harsh words to each other, where something ended in scandal or whatever. You know what I mean? Sure, like, it looked good. It looked clean. Everything was put in its place.
Just because it's buried doesn't mean that it's right.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So
just because it, there's not. So I think that it's that maybe the expectation that some of us have is that if everything is right in our lives, we're not going to have messy relationships, and it's not going to require work. You know, that relationships just do require work. The 32 years you're talking about required swallowing a lot of stuff.
It was tough.
Yeah, and applying grace.
There were times that didn't seem right. In the midst of it, but it's proven to be completely.
Yeah. Well, the truth is, if you're not working at it, it's going to fall apart. So you've got to, you know, marriage is, you know, is one of those relationships you've got to stay on top of. You've got to work at it. You've got to continue to do the things God's given you to do. Mm-hmm. You know, He's told us to love our wives the way Jesus loved the church. That's our marching orders. We're supposed to do that. If we're not doing that, it's going to take a toll. And the wives are supposed to respect their husbands and submit to their authority. If that's not happening, you're not seeing that happen, it's going to take a toll. So it's just, daily work, because those things aren't easy to do.
Well, and everyone's going to say it with a smile and with a tear on wedding day, you know, when they're going through their vows.
Right.
But yeah, when it comes to the day, when it has to be practiced over and over and over again, it's incredible how many people are just jumping off the bus, man.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't supposed to be like this. Yeah.
That right. Well, so this does get back to the expectations, and that's the idea that, you know, that emotional or relational discomfort is something that is abnormal, you know, and that if my life is set right, I'm not going to have those things. And that's just not, that's not
true. Yeah, it's false thinking.
Yeah, what's that?
False thinking.
It's false thinking. It's also very self-destructive. When the odd thing about all of this to me is that, well, there's several odd things, but one of the one of the big things that stands out is that the goal is, you know, I guess, you know, a more comfortable life, or a life that is, you know, absent all of this mess and conflict and things like that, that in cutting people off, the objective is to avoid all that. And well, really what you do is you take on something that's much, much worse, which is, you know, relational isolation, you know, and we see that happening. And the other thing, we mentioned it again, is that that there is much Christian counsel and books now that validate this.
Right.
And say, you've got to do this. God does not want you to be uncomfortable.
It's horrible.
You know, in relationships. Yeah. And if there's somebody that's making you uncomfortable, you need to get away from them. Protect yourself, right? I mean, that's just, and really, as you know, as pastors here, that's what you guys are dealing with, is that's going to happen out in the world, but when it, you know, when you see it happening in the church, and I don't think there's very many of us people that are listening today that this has not affected, this cutoff culture has not affected one way or the other. It's affected my life, and I know that it's affected some of yours too. So another word, we talk about abuse kind of being, you know, the definition of that being expanded for the particular use that the person that's using it wants. So there's another word that's thrown around a lot now, and that's the word toxic.
Toxic. That's a good one.
It is.
It sounds icky. Like if someone's toxic, they're just icky.
It sounds deadly.
It sounds poisonous.
Yeah.
That thing will kill you if you get too close to it.
Yeah.
It'll make you sick.
I thought it was interesting that Webster's defines toxic as dangerous to health or life, poisonous. And you go, yeah, that's toxic. And then it says, or very harmful or unpleasant.
Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. If it's unpleasant, is it toxic?
Right.
You know?
So if you're trying to validate yourself about walking away from someone, that's a really good word to use.
Right.
Yeah. That's strong.
Pretty broad definition.
A lot of strength. Yeah.
Well, all of these are tens on the word scale, right?
Abuse, uncomfortable
and toxic,
to deadly.
Like,
yep. That's a broad range. Uncomfortable to deadly is a pretty broad range.
It is. It is. Yeah. Yeah.
Skull and crossbones. Yeah.
And the thing is, too, is if you I suppose cloak or disguise maybe or you know use gratuitously for self-serving purposes these words. And you define them that way, I mean, they register, they get the hackle hair up on people, you know, it's toxic, I had to flee this, it was toxic, that was abusive.
But again, though, I'm not trying to take the other side of this, but I've counseled people before, like, you know, there's that, you know, be killing sin or it'll be killing you kind of counsel, you know, John Owen kind of stuff, where you're in a situation right now where this person is pulling you into sin, they're pulling you away from Christ. That is toxic. I mean, this is the, you know, this is gonna kill your walk and kill your testimony, and that's serious. And so we counsel people very often, you know, you need to make some changes in the people you're hanging around with and what you're doing. And this is real, you know, so I don't want to just discount that kind of stuff. It doesn't mean that person's dead to you and you never talk to them again, or that they're the evil person or whatever. It's just like, you have to be realistic sometimes about the toll that things take on you.
But that would be a valid context for the use of that word.
Yes.
Right. We're talking about, again, like abuse, people throwing around the world, calling everybody toxic for everything that we don't like.
Well, and the other thing is you're talking about, you're counseling somebody to avoid them because of the effect on their life. And what I'm looking at here is people that want to get away and are just looking for an excuse to do it.
Even in the scenario I'm talking about, you still love those people that you're making a break from. And I had to do that early on in my Christian walk with some friends, where I just started to see, I was hanging out with non-Christian friends and now I'm a new believer. And they kept pulling me back into that. And I finally said, guys, I love you. You're my friends, but I can't do this anymore. I'm on a new path.
But you didn't walk around calling them toxic, because that would be kind of offensive.
Not to their face.
But you treated that situation as if
they would
get something on you if you hung out.
They knew why I was making a break. And again, it hurt them. They actually, one of them, you know, became a believer because of that in some ways, because it put this mark of like, oh, wow, you know. So you never know what it's going to do. But that, again, that's a healthy version of it.
Healthy, yeah.
Then there's unhealthy versions of it, which is true of most of the stuff we're talking about.
Everything we're talking about, yeah.
Okay. Well, so that's the dark words, toxic and abuse and that, you know, category of words that goes with that can be, you know, very self-serving for a very destructive path. But there's also, on the other side, like there often is in therapy, right? There's the good words that sound good, right? For instance, one of them is that to behave in a self-protective manner like that and get rid of, you know, anything that you think is abuse or toxic or anything like that is called emotional intelligence.
Sounds nice.
Sure. How does that sound?
I don't know. I don't think I have that.
but you know what I'm saying. Made me feel warm and so. It's like, this is bad, but this is good.
Yeah.
Just by the color of the words, that it's emotional intelligence. And she says in this Facebook post that it's not emotional intelligence. It's fantasy.
Totally.
Now, what's the problem with fantasies? I mean, can't we have fantasies?
Well, I think in some of the, like, self-care is the other, you know, buzzword
there
that's out there.
Yep.
Is, you know, take care of yourself.
Looking out for
it is
one.
This very introspective, self-centered.
Keyword, you know, self.
I mean, yes, we should take care of ourselves, right? But take it to its extreme. It's very self-centered and introspective kind of a thing. And so anything that makes me feel uncomfortable, I'm going to avoid. And that's not emotionally intelligent. That's avoiding emotions, mm-hmm. right? And you know, emotions are fickle, right? They're a fickle mistress. our emotions are up and down. They're all over the place. And so we try sometimes as hard as we can to avoid, you know, negative emotions or emotions that we perceive to be bad. And at the end of the day, it's there's nothing intelligent about that. It's just an avoidance of, you know, things that we probably shouldn't be avoiding.
Yeah. But that's the way that this is kind of sweetened, right?
Right.
To make it look good.
Right, so it's called self-care, right? Or it's
sure.
called, you know.
And if I'm going to have emotions, I want them to be all good ones.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And if there's a bad one, there's something wrong.
Right.
And not only is there something wrong, but there's something wrong and it's your fault.
Right.
Right? Right? I mean, it's this is very.
Sounds like how a drug addict thinks.
Wow.
But I have several people I'm connected to on social media who just, you know, the current state of the world. They're posting, you know, kind of the sky is falling type posts. And what I find fascinating is there are people that are generally pretty disconnected from the things going on in the world, but they post about them. And it's, hey, how's everybody taking care of themselves these days because of what's going on over there?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Are you, you know, you have your puppies and your coloring books and those kinds of things. It's just an interesting, weird thing.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, it's an emotional immaturity.
Mm.
Right, it is, and it's a fantasy, and the problem with fantasies, of course, is that they always get disappointed.
Yeah.
They bring about more frustration instead of less, right?
Hmm?
There's a particular thing in here about parents I think they're were good, where she just made these four statements. Parents are not therapists. You know, our kids think that maybe our parents should have all the answers, respond all the right ways, say the right things, have all the right motives, all the right times, and all of that. And but they're not therapists. You know, they're not, and they shouldn't be. And they're not mind readers, she says. And I don't know about that, but because I remember my mom, and I think she was a pretty good mind reader.
Fair.
Right.
Kids blame their parents for their frustration and anger. That's typical. Mm-hmm. Did anybody go through that besides
anybody
me?
Still going through it?
Right. That's the key right there.
Well, this has become an epidemic, right? Like, again, yeah. It was weird, like back in the day, it was really odd if you had heard of, a kid being estranged from their parents or their parents from a kid, right? Where a kid like disowned their parents,
mm-hmm.
right? It was just a really weird thing, like a unicorn. And now it's extremely regular, even in the church. It's crazy how you've got this thing going on. And I think it all comes back to where we started, that this isn't a little pocket or some little thing that's going on in these little subcultures or you know, communities. This is something that is widespread. It's secular. It's normal. It's the answer. It's a solution. It's looked at as good for everybody in any context, mm-hmm. right? So, yeah, I have obviously a son that hasn't talked to me in a while. That's a little different. It's not because he's offended by my toxicity necessarily, but because he's, you know, in bondage to something.
Sure.
But, yeah. Yeah, this goes on all the time.
What are some things that everyone agrees are abuse?
Just to name them out there? Name them one by one?
Sexual abuse, physical abuse, right? Those are the biggies.
Sexual abuse, physical abuse,
yeah.
You know, beating, what else? Yeah. Anything else?
People throw out emotional abuse, which that, I'm not saying that's not real.
But there's a line out there somewhere.
But not everything is emotional abuse,
I mean,
I've
had people like just, like in a very violent, loud way, get right up in my face and scream at me. That feels like abuse, you know, and they didn't hit me. You know, it's happened right here in this building, actually. I can think of a time where it scared the pants, you know, scared the crap out of me.
Me too, and it happened here too.
Right? Yeah, and it was like,
but
you know,
it wasn't
that,
you.
It was like, could I call the police and say I've been abused? No, but it certainly felt pretty horrific, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. There was I remember this, I shouldn't even use her name. Okay, Nancy, when I was a kid, but not your Nancy.
Oh,
there was the Smiths, this family that lived behind us. It was Timmy and Jerry and Todd. Those were the boys, and we'd go over there all the time to play with these boys, me and my brother. And this lady, this mom, everything was just through the ceiling, like volume-wise, and just extremely mean. Like she couldn't, I never heard her say anything nice to her kids. It was always just this assault, this ongoing assault. And it wasn't once, and it wasn't twice. That was her mode of communicating. Like week after week when we'd go to their house to play, that was her. That's how she communicated. That's how she talked. Those were the things that she said to her kids. And it was bad. It was just relentless and just so strong. Anyway. I would say that was abuse when it comes to verbal.
Yeah.
So are there instances where treating something as abuse, that, you know, harsh language or criticism, I know, you know, husbands are just super critical of their wives and vice versa, right? But is there some things where it would be understandable if somebody was considering something to be abuse, but still not treat it as if it is abuse in terms of cutting the relationship off? You see what I mean? That there is, you know, you can understand somebody that's taking these withering assaults from, you know, their husband or their wife or somebody else, and you can understand them wanting to treat that way. That like it is abuse and want to kind of cut off that relationship, when really it just complicates it and makes it harder, but not to, you know, end up just cutting off that person.
One of the issues is that it's subjective.
Well, that's right?
What's abusive to you may not be abusive to me, or vice versa, right? And so we have kind of different capacities to put up with things. You know, you may have thicker skin than I do if somebody has a harsh word, right? And so there's a subjectivity to it that we've got to factor in and wade through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, But I think what David's talking about is that this being such a cultural phenomenon now, that it's all, that the bar is just being lowered to where basically anything that you don't like is considered abuse, and therefore we start writing ourselves permission slips, you know, to cut people off.
Right.
Right. Okay. Can the claim of abuse, even if you don't speak it, but you're just thinking it, can that derail the restoration of a relationship? Or even the continuance of a relationship. If you're just thinking this person is abusing me, and if you claim abuse, you know, verbally, can that? I mean, just the way you think about it, can that derail, you know, a relationship or the restoration of a relationship or even the continuation of one?
Sure. I don't know what you mean by derail. I would say it changes it. It definitely like changes. Like I have felt that many times where I have just sensed strongly that intention from the other party, where it's like, hang on a second, I see what's going on here. Like over and over and over again, it absolutely changes the way I approach that person, or the amount of time that's there, or the position I put myself in, what I offer of myself there. So I don't know, the adjustment thing. It derails what it could be, if that's what you mean.
Well, I mean, in derailing, what I meant is that it really, if you've decided that's what it is that there's really no path back.
Yeah, you can write somebody off, yeah, I think.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the way that we think about these things is really super important. Another statement that she says is, what we are witnessing today is not increased emotional intelligence. It's a collapse in tolerance for relational discomfort.
Sure.
Yeah. She says it pretty well, doesn't she?
Yeah. Which, as I mentioned earlier, like it's immaturity, emotional immaturity.
Yeah. So there's 4 things here that I want to read. Statements, kind of summary statements she makes. Fear of conflict has replaced skill at repair.
What?
Fear of conflict has replaced skill at repair.
No.
In other words, if a relationship's broken, the main thing about it is that you're afraid of what's going to happen to you.
Yeah.
And so therefore there's no...
So you cut it off.
No, I heard skillet. So, and I was thinking of bacon.
Skillet?
I heard a skillet, man.
Not a band? No, I think, you know, again, relationships necessarily involve work. You're always going to have to be working on things. You can't just, right, you know, if you want your relationship to work, you got to work through it. That's the way it works.
Right. And if the, the overarching idea is that is the fear and the things that's going to well up in you in this relationship, if self-protection, in other words, is the main thing that's in your head, you're not thinking about how to repair it or what you can do about it. You're not thinking about how to redeem it. You're trying to save yourself from it, right?
Yeah,
totally.
Okay, second statement. Discomfort is mistaken for danger.
Nobody likes to feel uncomfortable, and so we tend to avoid discomfort, especially if we're not actually emotionally intelligent, mm-hmm. right? We don't really like... I think we would all say, like, we've learned things through our discomfort, through our difficulties, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes those are... Like, God uses those things to learn... to teach us things that we wouldn't learn any other way, mm. other than having to walk through discomfort and difficulty.
Right.
Right.
So there's a usefulness to that. We'll get that.
So there's a redemptive value in God's world to walking through discomfort and difficulty.
Mm. Okay. So let's, what do we got? Maybe 10 minutes left or so?
Sure.
Okay. Let's see. Where did I put that? Did I put it down at the end? Yeah, I think it did. What do each of the following scriptures teach us about relationships? Because as Christians, this is to be our metric, our instruction in all of this cultural shift and all this stuff. This is to be the solid rock that we've got our feet on. So what are the following scriptures teach us about relationships? Ephesians 4:32 is, I think, just a great one. It says, be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving each other, just as God in Christ also has forgiven you.
That's simple.
Yeah. I think this, the heart of the Christian is always going to be, you know, recognizing how much we've been forgiven, like the lengths God has gone to forgive somebody like me. And then if you're going to withhold forgiveness from somebody else, it doesn't, something's off, you know?
Right.
Well, it'd be hard to even live with that hypocrisy. It is for me as a Christian, because it is a hypocrisy. It's like the ultimate hypocrisy, like the greatest thing I've ever heard, ever experienced, ever known. I'm doing the opposite in that moment.
Right.
And I know it when I do it. And I can hardly stand myself when I do that. So doesn't mean I don't, doesn't mean I always just... like quickly and freely and completely forgive, you know what I mean?
Sure.
But if I don't want to, if I don't see any problem with not doing it,
right?
I don't know how to do that as
a
Christian.
There's a disconnect.
I can't not see what he's done for me and with me and to me. Yeah.
Yeah.
So doesn't that require a change in focus? Because if my focus is how much that person has hurt me or how much I'm afraid that person is going to hurt me, you can't be focused on that and at the same time focused on how much you've been forgiven by God, and what you know, and that relationship, which this thing tells us too, that's our model, that's our standard, just as God in Christ has forgiven you.
Right.
Well, and again, Christ, when asked, how many times do I have to forgive? You know, you kind of want to put a number on it, like, is this enough times, and then I can just write them off. And he gave a ridiculous number, yeah. 70 times seven. It's like I'd lose. You can't keep track of 490 times. That's the point. You know, so it's again, the heart of the Christian should be to forgive. You know, yeah. to be full of charity in that regard.
Well, I think sometimes forgiveness isn't always a once and done kind of a thing.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Sometimes that 70 times 7 is maybe the same thing.
Totally.
Over and over again, because we keep taking it back.
Totally.
Right. Okay, I forgive it now, but I want it back.
Yeah.
I forgive it. Oh, I don't forgive it. Right.
Right.
And so.
Yeah. And a lot of it, again, is just knowing, like being aware of our continual offense against God.
Right.
Which is requiring, hopefully, which is receiving continual forgiveness, right? So it's not like we're going, it's not like we ever get past the point where we're not offending and needing right. forgiveness. Right. Like part of it's just being honest with who we are and the fact that we are serial offenders still receiving full forgiveness still.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's hard to continue to walk in a place of justifying withholding that. It just is, man.
Yeah. And this isn't something to be tried to see if it works. You know, there's obviously a lot of things that don't work in the cutoff culture. And this, of course, I think works better. But that's not why, forgiving and being tenderhearted and so forth. But that's not why we do it. The reason that we do it is because it pleases God. And it just so happens that it works out better relationally too, right? And you can't try forgiving another person, because if you forgive them, what's going to happen? They're going to do it again, right? It's just going to, you know, that's why that's not a one and done kind of thing. How about this? Insofar as it lies within you, be at peace with all men.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, God is good.
I mean, that's hard because we don't always want to be at peace.
Right.
We kind of sometimes in our passive aggressiveness, it's like I'm going to be mad, and I expect you to know that I'm mad, and right. I expect you to initiate with me, and that's not being at peace. Like being at peace, as far as it is up to us, means that we have to initiate,
right?
And this swings both ways, right? So this is both forgiving people that have offended us when we go through life, so that we can continue to live and act peacefully with them when we're around them. But it's also just that we're watching ourselves continually and our propensity to offend and say something stupid and do something stupid. So this is kind of like, hey, bring your A game when you're around people, right? Yeah. Don't give them a reason, even though today it's impossible to be offended, right? But live right in front of men, right?
Yeah.
And it goes both ways.
It does. And the other thing is that you need to understand that it's interesting, as Scripture says, insofar as it lies within you, or insofar it's under kind of your control.
Yeah, your side of the street.
Because you can still be doing the right thing, and this thing's just backfiring in your face all the time. Totally. But that is not a reason to stop doing it, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So, what even implied in that is the idea of not holding a grudge, which is hard.
Totally. Right.
It's not easy. You can't just not hold a grudge.
Dude, I'm super good at it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but it's always the idea of always being open to resolution.
Yeah,
That's the kind of people we should be. Like, if there's a way to resolve this thing, let's do it, and always being open to that, always seeking it, and always being open to it.
Yeah, I mean, peace is the opposite.
And it doesn't mean it fixes everything.
Yeah, war or tension.
Yeah,
right. And we want to seek to be in that spot in mind and heart with others. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Looking for, praying for, a way for this thing to be restored. Forgiveness and an ongoing relationship instead of looking for the first way out, right? Because it's difficult, right? Okay. So what about this Colossians 3? So as those who have been chosen of God, holy and beloved, put on a heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. You know, all of those things just kill this whole, cutoff culture.
Sure.
All of those words are torpedoes to the whole idea, right? Put on a heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience, bearing with one another.
Oh. Why did you have to say that?
There's this weird.
Yeah, they had to put that in there, didn't they?
There's kind of a weird mindset I see in people now where they're almost justified in this I'm mad as heck and I'm not going to take it anymore kind of mindset. Like, you know, I've had enough of this and I'm going to stand up for myself now. And I'm going to, you know, almost like there's this weird new freedom in this kind of thing to be able to do this.
Well, they don't realize that's the flesh in the moment, that's the flesh speaking, not the spirit speaking. Yeah. And so somehow they tack onto that, like, God would want me to do this.
Correct.
God would not want me to be a doormat. Yeah. God would not want me to, continue to lay down.
The healthiest thing I can do.
Right. And it's the flesh, not the spirit, that's preaching that sermon. But Christians have failed to see which is which. Well, and they're listening to the wrong
thing. And even the path to godliness and the path to Christ-likeness is Philippians 2, where God had every right to say, you know, I've had enough of this.
Yep.
And he took a different mindset towards people and he humbled himself and
became a doormat.
Yeah. Meekness. Meekness is something that's just lost. It doesn't mean, you know, I miss common decency and meekness and this kind of just a different mindset. Yep. Everybody wants to just fight about everything right now and be right. And I don't know.
And then justify it.
And then justify it. Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that doesn't work so well. So what happens is, you know, it's slash and burn.
Yeah,
you just, you know,
tear the other person down.
Tear the other person down, write them off, and then move on. But the thing is,
own them and dispose of them.
Right.
Just the way people are on social media right now, it's just like, you know, there's just no decency anymore. It's just as quickly as they can is rip that person apart, ridicule them, make them look stupid, toss them aside like they're a worthless piece of garbage, and it's just so gross. And Christians are doing it too.
Yeah, they are.
You know.
Right. And well, yeah. And again, I, you know, no, I don't hate to sound like a beating drum on this because I've been I've experienced this more than once where this kind of mindset that is very fleshly, that caters to fleshly, passions. Okay. And lusts of wanting to be in control, wanting to not have the discomfort, wanting to, you know, not having to suffer, right? All of this has been endorsed by the church, by counselors, by pastors, by a lot of Christian books, and I don't mean just one or two. It's really that's something that's taken up more and more space in the Christian bookstores these days. Is this thing that you got to be for you, and so. Yeah, so I just want to warn people that if they read something or hear something that is contra to what these scriptures say, it doesn't matter if a church or a pastor or a counselor says it's okay.
Right.
It's not. It's not okay. It's destructive, very destructive to you and to others. So that's my little rant.
I like rants. I have a little rant that hopefully is helpful to somebody. I had an epiphany at some point in my Christian walk. Me and my wife have had a very difficult marriage, very toxic and abusive two way.
Wow.
For years.
Let's get that out.
Not good. Let's just get that out of the way. And the moment that I started focusing on my relationship with the Lord, my wife got better overnight.
Funny how that works, isn't it?
It changed everything. And I guess I was angry and kind of annoyed that it took me so long to have that simple biblical epiphany. That when it stopped becoming about me and became about him, she was rad all of a sudden. You know what I mean? And it's because of what it does to us, obviously, when we're not about us, but we're about him first. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's like, you know, that simple. When I do marital counseling and stuff, everything always runs back to that. How do you become more Christ-centered with you, right? Stop looking at her. How are you doing with him, right?
Yeah.
And it just changes so much because then it's not about self-care. I mean, we're actually satisfied in what we really need as far as self-care because we're looking at the proper object, the only one that can care for us best. It changes everything, but we're also becoming less about us as we become more about him, which then changes how toxic this person is, right? that I'm constantly focused on. It's, it just changed so much. And I even see it today. I don't do it perfectly every day, but when I get to that point where she starts annoying me or whatever in our, you know, where I start kind of having these little rocks pile up that I have against her over a period of a few days or whatever, there's a point where it's just like, oh, I've just become about me again, right? And you got to shift to that object of health, which is not her and not me. It's him.
Right.
Which, and again, it changes everything.
Goes back to the, you know, you're dealing with broken people right now that are trying to find a way to fix themselves.
Right.
And they're literally looking in the wrong place, because the answer is the gospel.
It's to be reconciled.
I was just thinking that.
Nook and put up.
Little Eddie Murphy.
Yeah. Sorry.
No,
we've been heavy with the SNL references too.
But it would be the restoration to God and finding satisfaction in that relationship.
Totally.
is what is missing.
When we are vertically focused, it changes our ability to be in any relationship.
Yeah.
And to love those people like we're supposed to love them.
Yeah. Well, and then you stop looking to people to solve all of your issues and all of your needs.
Yeah.
It's almost like, to me, it's like a Matrix moment where you kind of all of a sudden you see over
what
it really is.
Yeah.
And the bullets don't.
That's my point.
You know?
So if we get one more quote from, like, say, Princess Bride, we can be done, right?
There you go.
We've done all the rest of them. So Tozer said that the most important thing about a person is what comes into their mind when they think about God.
Yep, yep.
Right.
And that's for good or bad,
yep.
Right?
Yeah.
It's not just for Christians that are thinking rightly about God. But if your idea, which is what we all want to have, right, this your idea of God is that he loves me and he doesn't want me to suffer and he doesn't want me to struggle and he doesn't want me to, you know,
da-da-da-da-da,
then if that's your working assumption about how God views you, instead of saying, no, I'm going to use suffering in your life to, you know, as a grace infusion point, as, you know, that this is this, we're working together here through this. But if you automatically say, you know, when you're thinking that God doesn't want you to do this, then you're justified in avoiding it.
Totally.
Sure. I think almost every one of us.
That's a wrong, super wrong view about God.
If you were to ask each one of us, where are the points in life where you grew the most? It's going to be during adversity, through the difficult times, not through the easy times. And again, we're trying to do everything we can to avoid anything difficult. Guess what's not going to happen?
Right.
You know, growth.
Yep.
And so this is part of the thing, you know, that God uses in our lives, and it's for our good and his glory.
Right.
And we need to not, you know, try to avoid it.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. And the problem is, like, bottom line, like, we love ourselves more than anybody else. Like, I don't care what anybody says, and that includes God. We love ourselves more than him and others. And I just love that we have this example in Christ, right? When he came, and you see him continually going, you're going, like, how in the world could he endure such a thing? How could he go through this thing the way that he went through it? He's constantly looking at the Father, right? He's not looking at himself. He actually shows us what it looks like to actually love God above ourselves and above others. And then you see this display of you know, a guy that wins the world due to it. And it's powerful, right? So, yeah, it's neat that we have that example in Christ, where he's just constantly reliant upon, how do I do the will of the Father, right? And that's what I want to see in my life. I just don't do it well, but it stinking works. Like, I'm a better husband when I do it.
Right.
So you mean,
imagine that.
That thing that glorifies God is actually the most beneficial to you? Is that?
That's
no.
Well,
really?
Go home and think about it. Pray about it.
Okay. Okay. So, one last question, because I'm drawing blanks on this, but you guys are pastors, so, you know.
Oh, you're not a pastor.
Well, so are you.
That's right.
But anyway, so you come up with an answer for this. So what counsel do you have for the listener who has been cut off by a family member or brother in Christ?
Sorry, I skipped. That's actually why I was bringing up what I just brought up. That would be my advice / answer.
Which is to look to God.
You need to start focusing on your relationship with the Lord rather than that person that's causing you all this turmoil and trauma.
Yeah.
That's the only way you're going to endure any relationship.
That's good counsel.
Well, and the other advice we always give people is to make sure you've cleaned your side of the street. So, so check out what you've done. Think about what not, because we focus so heavily on what they've done to us, and you focus on that. What have I done, and what can I do to reconcile it? Do what you can. you know, to clean your side of the street. And then you've done what you can do apart from turning to the Lord and praying and, you know, seeking him, because that's where you're going to find relief. But right. That's sometimes all you can do. And my heart breaks for, we've got several people in our church right now that I can think of that have been cut off from meaningful relationships. Yep. And as hard as it's been, I have seen tremendous growth. In their lives. It's been hard. It's been humbling. It's probably been the most difficult thing they've gone through ever, but it's not without purpose.
Yeah.
And so keep hoping in the worst of situations and the worst of times that God is actually working something through this.
So God can use even this.
Well, and I've seen it. We've seen it firsthand. I mean, not only can he does, and he will.
Yeah. So that's very encouraging.
Well, I mean, again, I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemies, you know, some of what I've seen people go through. And yet, you know, it's like, wow. To watch the sanctification, you know, just move up the chart in this rapid way.
It's like so much of the Christian life where the guy says, you know, that was the greatest thing that ever happened in my life, and I never want to do it again.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Chad?
I think I would just add to that, like, it's, I don't know, somebody said this, I don't know who, but it's hard to hate somebody that you regularly pray for.
Yeah.
And so if you're the one that's been cut off, and if you have, you know, kind of kept your side of the street as clean as you can, you know, pray for that person, that God would work in them and redeem them. A lot of times we want to pray the imprecatory prayers against, you know, the people that we perceive to be against us, right? Yeah.
Break their jaw, Lord.
Right. Yeah. But
break their teeth in
their
mouth.
It's hard to hate somebody that you pray for regularly. And I don't know about you guys, but just my prayer so much these days about anything is just redemption. That God would redeem the things that particularly seem irredeemable, because nothing in his economy is irredeemable.
Yeah.
I may look at something and say that's irredeemable, but nothing is irredeemable for God.
Right.
But that's the heart of our God.
Right.
And so to pray that way, to me, is, you know, that's praying according to his will.
I mean, the bottom line is the Christian loves redemption. Right. Right?
Yeah.
And if you don't, then maybe you got some things to figure out.
Yeah, that's our...
And redemption doesn't necessarily mean things are going to go back to the way they were.
No.
Yes, right, not necessarily. Right. That'd be another discussion for another time.
Yeah. We're not filling in the blanks of what each redemptive, you know, context needs to be, but we are wanting it all to be right.
Exactly.
For everybody.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right. Wow. That's something of thinking about how a relationship that's broken, what you can do to make it right as opposed to make it better or go away or whatever.
Yeah,
right. Know?
And so, I would I'd just say that 1 Peter 4:8 says, above all. I think he means that, above all, keep fervent in your love for one another, because love covers a multitude of sins. If we're focusing our time and effort, our thoughts, on loving instead of picking some person apart or doing things that we think are going to be self-protective like that, all of a sudden some of those things that have been jumping out of us in living color, you know, in the middle of the night and, you know, get your blood pressure up and all those kind of things, they're going to kind of start getting black and white and kind of being submerged a little bit. So there's so much good scriptural counsel. And again, just want to say, unfortunately, there's been so much in Christian counseling that ain't necessarily biblical counseling, by the way, that kind of flies in the face of this.
Totally does.
This look out for that. Just because somebody has said it's okay, it's not.
I will just say, just the heart of us as pastors, if there's somebody out there listening that is actually going through a situation where actual abuse is taking place and you're in a dangerous situation, you're not alone, and you can let us know about this,
you bet.
We will, because the other side of this cutoff culture is cover up culture in the church, and we don't want to be a part of that. If there's something going on that is against the law or that's, you know, that's dangerous to you and your family, you need to let us know about this, and we'll 100%. we'll fight that battle with you. Anyway.
Yeah.
Just so we're not misunderstood in what we're saying.
Right. Yeah. I appreciate that.
There's no place for that.
Context. Yeah. Anything else?
I think we covered it.
How are we doing time-wise?
We're over time, but that's all right.
Terry?
I mean, but.
When are you going to learn?
But based on the fact that you sent a, you know,
a tome
that yeah. much.
Well, David cut me off at the knees. He said, "We can't do it this way. We just gotta do it organically." I think you're right.
I did it. Yeah. I did it with love, though.
You did it with love.
I didn't think you were toxic or anything or abusive.
I didn't cut you off, brother. That's the good news. So.
Yeah. Right.
All right. I'll pray. Lord, we thank you that. We thank you that you drew near to us and not further away from us, even though you saw all that stuff in us that exists. And I pray that we would somehow, by your power and the love that you have, be able to do that with our relationships. In your name, amen.
Amen.
Thanks for tuning in to One Decent Pastor. If you'd like more information about the church, go to our website at thedoor3r.org.